Well, let me just begin the next section. I'll begin the next section now. Okay. So, when we're looking at the alignment of, let's say, Sirius, Leo, Mercury, Saturn, we have another alignment, Sirius, Sun, Jupiter, Venus. It's as if the Sun can substitute for Leo. So we could almost substitute in the first alignment. The Sun is carrying Leonian energies, Sirius, Sun, Mercury, Saturn. The Sirius representing the spirit at this fifth initiation, which is the crowning in a way of the Sirian system of initiation. Crowning as far as our Earth is concerned, but just the beginning as far as the Sirian method of initiation is concerned. And the Sun representing the soul aspect, Mercury the mind, and Saturn the brain. We have to have this kind of spirit-soul-mind-brain alignment to achieve the fifth degree. Spirit, soul, mind, brain alignment are needed for the fifth degree. And now we're being given this triangle, the Sun, Jupiter, Venus, sounding so benefic, you know, but really pulling the lunar life away so that it can start afresh, no longer trammeled by its attachment to the chaotic conditions of matter. Now we are continuing, and well, there's so many things not resolved, but at least we have some ways of thinking about a very important magnetic triangle of the Sun, Jupiter, and Venus, and the transition that is necessary to bring our Earth into greater alignment with the program, Earth and humanity, into greater alignment with the program in the second solar system. And when you look at Sun, Jupiter, and Venus, you see two of the planets which the Sun obviously is using to with the solar logos is obviously using to bring his development more in line with the second aspect. There is the primordial ray, and it's called the divine ray in cosmic fire, and this primordial ray is the third ray, the ray of the previous major solar system, also the ray of the moon chain, and the ray in relation to which there is a problem in our solar system and even in the larger cosmos, which involves the Great Bear and the Pleiades. Our Sun needs, our solar system, our solar logos needs to get with the second ray and two of his great allies, subsidiary logoi, maybe aspects of himself in a way, are the logos of Jupiter and the logos of Venus. And this is, this triangle is pulling away from the limitations of the third aspect of divinity, pulling away and making it possible for the second aspect to flourish, which it must in this solar system. I think much of the solar system has been spent already fighting with the legacy of the third aspect of divinity. Now we reach a crucial time in planetary initiation, and I also think in solar systemic initiation, where the balance will tip toward the second aspect of divinity. Okay, you know, I have a certain adhesiveness here. I hate to leave the subject because just hints have been given and responses to these hints and a layout and alignment of spirit, soul, mind, brain has been given, which I think signifies a very high level of relationship. But we are dealing with the Leonian subject, and we're dealing with the way that Sirius is important at the fifth initiation. There's something about this five-pointed star of Sirius, something about our whole program of initiation, which in a way climaxes, as far as our solar system is concerned, at the fifth initiation. Then we are truly on the Sirian mode of development, which takes us even to initiations as high as the Christ and perhaps beyond. Is mastership in relation to the Logos of Sirius to be found at our ninth initiation? Is transfiguration to be found at our seventh, such that the Christ could be considered a transfigured Sirian initiate? There's so little that we know here. We just know that the influence of Sirius is amazingly benevolent, that there has been a retardation in our solar system, and especially in relation to our planet, that Sirius and Venus and other sources, Jupiter, are stepping in to help reaccelerate the retarded condition in which we find ourselves, the condition in which we're held back on this planet from what we should be. And who knows, is our solar logos held back too? I wonder if there's an analogy that just the way our Earth should be in the same position as Venus at this time, equally as advanced. You kind of wonder whether our solar logos should be in a similar condition to Sirius, which is certainly a sacred solar logos, certainly has achieved the third cosmic initiation, whereas our sun has not. 1 degree behind. And you kind of wonder if the planetary series of initiations are a little different from that of the solar series. They're both called cosmic, but you kind of wonder whether in a series of seven initiations, whether Venus hasn't achieved the third. A cosmic initiation of a kind, but not necessarily the same as the third cosmic initiation of the solar logos, whereas our Earth has not even achieved the second. Let's just make sure that all is well here. Looks as if it is. So the going on. Did I think that the Leo chapter would be easy somehow? Through Uranus, Leo is related to three other signs of the zodiac. I can think of this now. Leo wasn't brought in under the veiled Uranus earlier. I had to put a parenthesis around Leo. Through Uranus, Leo is related to three other signs of the zodiac, Aries, Libra, and Aquarius. And remember, when we were looking at the signs related to Virgo, we could not include Leo. It was a sign of crisis, but it had a Neptune connected with it, which certainly connected with the veiled Neptune of Virgo, but we couldn't include it. It wasn't allowed. Here, we do see that the veiled Uranus is counted as a relational factor. So Aries with hierarchical Uranus, Libra with esoteric Uranus, Aquarius with orthodox Uranus, and Leo with veiled hierarchical Uranus. And these three constellations with Leo form what has been called the subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul. I think, you know, DK must be a member of that group of astute hierarchical astrologers who, he says, are known for their selflessness. Where else could such information be of value? Where else could it originate? Where else would it be noticed? So the subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul, because they are related to the permanent atoms, which persist from life to life, and which form during the cycle of reincarnation the, well, semi-permanent, I would say, repositories or the storing houses of the experiences undergone during life in the three worlds. I think we see how these great lords of constellations, C-O-N-S-T-S, constellations, are related to matters high and low, even to the microcosmic reincarnating human being with those tiny generators of vehicles called permanent atoms. So we will see the manner in which this relationship occurs, and we will underline this, if I haven't done it yet, I have, the subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul. Okay. Here we go. The subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul. A great lord of a constellation related to these tiny factors. I suppose we could say qualitatively related. Let's see. QY. How about that? QLY. QLT. Qualitatively related to these four factors. Aries is connected with soul intention. I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule, the plane of higher mind I think, carrying in a way the power of the first ray of the monad and directing the soul into incarnation. Let form again be sought as it ever is in the reincarnating cycle. So Aries is connected with soul intention, the vibratory activity of which, under the impulse of the monad, yes, initiates the successive involutionary periods which produce physical appearance upon the physical plane. So it is, as there is descent from the mental plane, at the outset of each incarnational period, that descent is a type of involution. So Aries is connected with soul intention, the beginning of cycles, and every new incarnation is the beginning of a new cycle. It appears that Aries is soul intention, the purpose. Why did I take my incarnation? Aries holds the key to that. Why this time? What was the purpose, the pattern, the design which was to be achieved in this slight incarnation? Then we move on and see, Libra is related to the mental unit. So we have soul and mental unit, a point of balance, perhaps, on the fourth plane. So in this way, Libra is related to the number four. For the mental unit is on the fourth subplane of the mental plane. And it is a mental sign. It's related to supermind. And the mental unit has four parts. This is here's quite a correlation of Libra with four. And the mental unit has four parts. And produces, and is the fourth aspect. If we count physical body, etheric body, astral body, and mental body. So many connections of Libra with the number four, even though, as usually described, there is no fourth ray coming through Libra. The mental unit, however, is associated with the mental rays, naturally, and Libra is qualified by the mental rays, the third ray extensively through the constellation itself, through Saturn, and Uranus has third ray, and Venus has fifth ray. We're dealing with activities upon the plane of mind, third and fifth ray. And as we saw when studying the sign Libra, produces eventually the balance between the pairs of opposites. So on the fourth subplane of the mental plane, a kind of balance between the personality and the soul is produced. Important decisions are made there about which way to turn. Towards the soul, which has gathered power for a fight in Scorpio, or towards the material personality. So anyway, we also saw that Libra was involved with Kurukshetra in the ancient days, and that an emotional decision was there being made, and even today the people inclined towards emotionalism are making emotional decisions according to their ideals, rather than carefully thought out mental decisions, more to be experienced by the more advanced man in Scorpio. So this produces a balancing between the pairs of opposites, which way shall I go according to my desires. This is brought about on the astral plane, even today and in ancient days, but I imagine that there are some Librans who are highly mental and are working out the balance in the mind. It is the attainment of this balance which produces the reversal of the mode of passing around the zodiacal wheel. Perhaps the decision to reverse the wheel is at first one of emotion and desire. And it takes place when integration has occurred. And man is focused upon the mental plane. So mental focus and an important emotional decision. And an important decision which involves the astral body. He can then, through the right use of the mind, discriminate between the pairs of opposites and find the narrow razor-edge path which passes between them and keep his balance upon it. Sounds like, sounds like life upon the fourth subplane of the mental plane. We see that both are involved. Venus is the ruler of Libra. Camomanus is involved with Venus. Venus and both Sirius, in a way, represent Camomanus. We're talking about a cooperation here, shifting the balance on the astral plane so that one's desires and ideals move towards reversal, and seeing with clarity through the right use of the mind, a balancing factor, the way one must go. So the mind presents the evaluation, and the emotions get behind it. Whoop. The mind presents the evaluation and the emotions get behind it. So he does emphasize here the astral plane in relation to Libra, but it really has to do with the careful weighing of values on the mental plane. There is a balance on the astral plane between what is desired. Do I desire the soul? Do I desire the personality? A balance is produced, and then on the mental plane, the balance is tipped as the evaluation shows the increasing value of choosing the soul direction. But it seems that the emotions have to be involved just as they are for many people today and as they were in ancient times. So anyway, Libra, a mental sign, and a careful balancing in the orientation of balancing on the plane of mind, affecting the orientation of desire towards one or other of the pairs of opposites. The white magical process will not work unless the emotional body is strongly involved. So it seems that the orientation towards the soul and the reversal of the wheel, the power to drive towards a new objective, will not work unless the desires tip towards that which the careful mind indicates as of greater value. The two have to be together. If the emotions start to tend towards the soul, but the mind does not reinforce that direction, then the emotional orientation may not last. If the emotions start tipping towards the lower of the pairs of opposites, but the mind indicates the worthlessness of doing so, then perhaps that lower orientation will be simply temporary. When both cooperate, the mental evaluation showing the value of the soulward path and the desires tending that way, then we have a combination in which a real reversal can occur, and one can begin to fight one's way forward against the clockwise wheel, which will continue to turn and to rend and to create friction against the new path which has been decided upon. What about Leo? Interesting here. Now, you know, we're talking about the reversal of the wheel, and remember, somewhere it will be discussed that Leo and Libra together are involved in an incarnation where the reversal of the wheel is occurring. Either Sun in Leo and Libra rising, or Sun in Libra and Leo rising. And DK says, should we not investigate such incarnations to see whether a reversal of the wheel is occurring at that point? Not a final reversal, it's still a frictional reversal. It's a decision to turn oneself towards a contrary stream. One is not born along yet until the second initiation. When one takes the second initiation, one enters the stream, and then support comes from the stream of energy naturally flowing towards soul expression. One is not swimming against the current so vigorously with so much conflict. Leo is connected with the astral permanent atom for the reason that desire or the power to go forth and occultly touch that which is desired is the basis of all sense of awareness or responsiveness and the underlying cause of progress or evolutionary movement forward. For the reason that desire or the power to go forth, sometimes Mars is called Mars, the planet of desire, he who goes forth. Desire or the power to go forth, it's not centripetal, it's centrifugal. And occultly touch that which is desired is the basis of all sense of awareness or responsiveness. Unless we desire to engage, the responsiveness will be much curtailed. And the underlying cause of progress or evolutionary movement forward. Motivation, a desirous incentive to engage. To engage with the not-self. It is the keynote of the man who has achieved the true self-centered attitude which makes him an individual. He looks at his environment and says, what do I want in this environment? He goes forth to engage with or grasp that which he desires in the environment. And other persons are aspects of this environment too. Later, as responsiveness grows and the world of small affairs is converted into the world of ever larger values and reality, the desires change into aspiration and finally into spiritual will, purpose, and intent. So, from desire to aspiration to spiritual will, three phases of Leo, but all starting with that great factor, which is desire. So how does the self, how does the immersed soul in incarnation discover itself by using Mars to go forth and to engage with the not-self and respond thereto. Meanwhile, discovering ever deeper layers of the of selfhood. The astral permanent atom, one thinks in a way of the solar plexus, the seat of desire, and why it should be related to the sun. It is ruled by Mars. In a way, the sun rules all the chakras, is found blazing away in each one of them. So, there is this regathering of the pieces by Isis. Osiris has been split into many pieces. The consciousness is fragmented. It takes engagement with the not-self, with others, to learn what the self is. Leo has this powerful incentive to become more and more of the whole. And this is rooted at the desire nature which responds to the soul. Let's say, you know, the desire nature reflects the soul, which is closely related to Leo. Leo and the solar angels, the fifth grade of hierarchy, the higher mental plane, the astral body reflects the soul, even as the mental body reflects the will, or Atma, which is ruled by Libra. This is interesting. So here is Atma, ruled by Libra, and it's reflected in the mind. And here is the astral body. Well, let's just say, here is the astral body reflected in the soul, the sunflower, the Leonian soul, the solar principle, the solar lord, thus connected with Leo, reflected in the astral body with which the soul is connected. Regarding Aquarius, well, it rules the lowest of the creative hierarchies. It's eventually connected with the physical permanent atom, which is, as you know, upon etheric levels, and we understand that Aquarius and Gemini rule the etheric body. Those two signs particularly, thus both Mercury and Uranus have everything to do with the electrical links that constitute the etheric body. It is this individual web which is the medium of the relationship to the whole, as all forms are possessed of the etheric body. or at least within the three worlds, it is so. Well, let's just say in the solar system. And of course, there is the solar system is consisting of the cosmic etheric body and the cosmic dense body. So there is a way in which the systemic etheric body relates to the four higher subplanes, which are the cosmic ethers. So it is this individual web which is the medium of relationship to the whole, the universal consciousness of Aquarius. Again, that idea becomes expressive just insofar as the individual etheric body is in conscious relation with the etheric body of humanity, the solar system, and of course the planets. So he's telling us here that the individual etheric body, which is systemic, must be related to the cosmic ethers, which is the etheric body of the full solar system. So this interchange of ethers, which comes about at a certain time, whereby the higher ethers permeate and substand and pass through, pervade the lower ethers, however they do that, whatever the exact mechanism of their accomplishing that may be, that is an important factor. So what do we have then? These are all united by Uranus. And we have Uranus as the seventh ray planet inducing incarnation. So, as a matter of fact, the sacral center, ruled by Uranus, produces incarnation. So, let's just say Uranus, closely related to incarnation through its seventh ray. We're told that the scientific servers will use the seventh ray, and one of their major tasks will be to study incarnation. First and seventh and fifth rays will be involved in what they do. Uranus is the scientific planet par excellence. It always encourages getting into new areas and finding out what they hold. There's a great curiosity. It's the higher octave of Mercury. Mercury, the planet of curiosity. Uranus, even more investigative. I mean, just kind of look at the Aquarian horoscope of Thomas Alva Edison. Others animated by that Uranian curiosity to get into the subtle energies of things. So this is all about incarnation. Uranus in its seventh ray is related to incarnation. It's related to the scientific servers studying the modes of incarnation and the soul and the three permanent atoms. Three permanent atoms are related to the processes of incarnation. Uranus bringing things down through the seventh ray, bringing the archetype onto the physical plane with the help of its companion Saturn, ruling the denser part. But the physical permanent atom really is etheric, and when we start talking ether, Uranus is much more involved than Saturn. So these four constellations, Aries, the soul, the impulse of the soul, Libra, the mental unit, and the decisions made mentally about orientation, until there really is a mental focus, there can be no reversal of the wheel, so Libra does need to be a strongly mental sign. Leo giving that great desire to go out and find oneself, to find a larger and larger self through engaging with the apparent not-self, and then Aquarius engaging the lowest of the creative hierarchies, giving embodiment to the soul. We talked about this with the connection of Virgo, the Christ energy, finding a vehicle in the lowest of the creative hierarchies ruled by Uranus, ruled by Aquarius, really by the moon, but probably veiling Uranus violet, the color violet, is closely connected with this creative hierarchy, we realize that the moon is said to be violet here, but really the violet planet is Uranus. The hierarchical moon does veil in its highest position Uranus, as well as Vulcan and Neptune. So these four are the quaternary, what did he call them? Some kind of quaternary. How to describe it? The subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul. Yes, it's not about the physical body, is it? All of the permanent atoms are actually subjective factors, and the soul is certainly a subjective factor. The subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul. Tend to want to copy that and put that in a prominent place where after studying all of them, one can really remember what they do. This is Leo should be in a way a number 3. Oh, it's a 4. Well, let's just say 3. Nope. Unless I leave it that way, it's going to be a 4. And then 4 Aquarius, that fits. So we have been dealing with the subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul, and I think we see how important is Uranus in the whole process of incarnation. Well, so is Neptune. We've learned, at least in the stage of a very high initiate, but then that initiate is going to begin to orient himself towards the cosmic astral plane, which Neptune rules. So the lowest point of anchorage on the cosmic astral plane will be Neptunian, because it rules that hierarchy which will occupy the 7th position, veiling the Christ. And I think this is another reason why that Neptune is associated with the base of the spine center, but also suggesting orientation towards the cosmic astral plane. I think we were dealing there when we saw Sirius, Leo, Mercury, and Saturn with a very high state, with Mercury being the Sirius being what, the star of Mercury? Is that how it's described? Saturn being one of the major transmitters of Sirian energy. Saturn deeply related to Leo in a first-ray sense. Yes, we may well have been looking at a Sirian alignment necessary, not for the 4th initiation, but actually for the 5th. He called it a very high initiate. Well, you cannot really call the 3rd degree initiate a very high initiate. I don't think so. But, you know, we all stand to be corrected. I would point out that make sure I have my red brackets for notes. I would here point out that the term permanent atom is essentially symbolic, and that what we call the permanent atom is in reality only a unit of energy within the sphere of influence of the soul ray, which can at any time pick it up, if I may use so un-euphonious a phrase. This is the soul ray can magnetically reappropriate it. Well, the permanent atoms are found within the egoic lotus, and They are easily influenced by the soul ray, which pours through the entire egoic lotus. So we're dealing with a unit of force, not with any really substantial thing. It is a unit of energy. Who knows what its appearance may be? Maybe Babbitt tried to draw this unit of force in his book on color, the so-called Babbitt atom. It comes from the 1870s, and probably there are a lot of scientists who would think that what has been rendered there is just nonsense, but there are theosophical scientists who probably do the necessary research with that particular structure. So the soul, so it's there all the time within the causal body, within the sphere of the causal body, and as the soul goes forth to reincarnate, it attaches itself through concentration, I suppose, with the permanent atoms and manipulates them. The solar angel does that in such a way that the design for the next incarnation will be according to certain specifications. And it is these permanent atoms which generate those vehicular specifications, the kind of vehicles one needs, the kind of rays one needs for that particular incarnation to fulfill the intention of the solar angel and of the man within the causal body who, I think, participates to some degree, especially as he advances in seeing ahead what the incarnation will be. He certainly has the supervision and the incredible wisdom of the solar angel, which infuses his consciousness, and I would say he doesn't do it all alone. It's done with the aid of the solar angel, who is really a mathematical manipulator of the permanent atoms according to deep knowledge about the reincarnational process and how all of this is to be engineered. It's just staggering when one thinks about what goes into creating an incarnation. In these atoms, the past memory of the personal self is stored. These are in the nature of memory cells and are repositories of past experience, of gained quality, and of the particular note which the body which, and of the particular note which the body of which it is the nucleus has achieved. This is what's found in these memory cells, in these permanent atoms. This is a kind of a metaphorical statement. It's a memory cell. What actually is it? What as actually is it in the fifth-ray sense, structurally? But the possibility of containing these memories is there. Nothing escapes. All is retained. Quality, too, is found there, but that is harvested from the permanent atoms. We might say that quality is extracted from the experiences in which the gain of quality occurred. So quality is extracted into the causal body from the experiences in which the quality was gained. So the causal body enriches itself. The soul feeds upon those experiences of quality. When we work in our life in such a way that we produce quality, we are producing it for the sake of our internal storehouse, our treasury. And again, I would say it is the solar angel under Venus, which understands the method of extraction of quality from experience. So in these atoms, the past memory of the personal self are stored. I guess all of our past memories, although DK says so many of them are not worth retrieving, and so many incarnations are not even worth studying, he seems to suggest. They are in the nature of memory cells. This is how the method by which past memories are stored. And these memory cells are the repositories, the storehouses of past experience, of gained quality. But there, I suppose, the experience and the qualities are united, but within the causal body, the qualities are extracted. So they are not recollections anymore, they are simply inherent qualities gained. And the method of gaining, it would be considered a kind of encumbrance, no longer necessary, slowing down the use of the quality which is extracted. And of the repositories of the particular note which the body, of which it is the nucleus, has achieved. So there is a vibratory note which each body has thus far achieved, a pitch. And this pitch, whether in tune with the other pitches or not, is sounding in the permanent atom. And the next vehicle will sound accordingly, and the attempt will be made to raise the pitch or fine-tune it. They are material in nature, but of course matter is, in a way, energy, right? They are not, they are material because they are part of the dense physical body of the planetary logos. They are part of the dense physical body of the planetary logos. And they are connected only with the form aspect and are imbued with as much of the quality of consciousness as the soul has succeeded in developing in the three worlds. So the different vehicles assist different vehicles according to their degree of refinement, instruments of consciousness in each incarnation. So they the consciousness is really that of the soul, and these vehicles make possible the expression of a certain degree of soul consciousness. These vehicles make possible a certain degree of expression of soul consciousness according to the refinement of the vehicles and that depends on the condition of the permanent atoms. So the more refined the condition of the permanent atoms, the higher the note, the more connection there is between the condition of the permanent atom and the possibility of expressing soul consciousness, the more soul consciousness will be expressed through the vehicles. The more sensitivity there will be, the more the growth of that sensitive factor that we've been discussing in Leo. Well, he relieves us here, in a sense, by saying that the whole subject is most abstruse and will only be understood and the symbolism involved rightly interpreted when clairvoyance is a normal attribute of average man. Well, who will understand? Well, will the disciple understand when clairvoyance is the normal attribute of the disciple, or will we have to wait for the day when clairvoyance is such a normal faculty that even the average man possesses it, and then deeper understanding will come? Well, you know, there are psychics that can see the permanent atom, and how would they see the degree to which these atoms are imbued with soul consciousness? They are connected with the form aspect and are imbued with as much of the quality of consciousness as the soul has succeeded in developing in the three worlds. These permanent atoms will not build a vehicle under normal circumstances which produces a reduced quality of consciousness, reduced compared to what the soul has already succeeded in developing. Usually it's a steady progress unless karma intervenes and demands less sensitive vehicles for certain repayments. Sometimes you see people born with Down syndrome and you wonder what the real condition of the permanent atoms may be, and whether this is not simply a karmic condition, or does it really represent a low stage of evolution? Apparently the heart development is very strong. It is possible to have one's faculties somewhat reduced or greatly reduced during a particular incarnation to cultivate another aspect. Perhaps, it would be strange, but an over-development of the concrete mind might lead to Down syndrome, so that the concrete mind was in complete abeyance and the heart quality could be raised a bit to balance. This might be an intervention by the solar angel to create a more healthy balance in a dangerous condition. Because we do know that overdevelopment of the concrete mind takes one closer to the Black Lodge, and when the sheep are separated from the goats on our planet at the Day of Judgment, those who will be transported to other spheres are those with an underdeveloped or overdeveloped concrete mind. Thus, they will not really be on the path. Only those on the path will remain. So clairvoyance then will be the normal attribute of the average man. Then the focus of the substance in any form, its galvanizing center, can be seen. The focus of the substance in any form, its galvanizing center, i.e., a permanent atom, yes, can be seen. So I do not here advise much reflection on the subject, as it is an exceedingly difficult one, probably something undertaken by the scientific ashrams on the higher mental plane. Exceedingly difficult one, constituting in itself a very advanced science. Something, I suppose, that will make our present sciences look relatively easy, and embodying the mystery of the first solar system. The last one, I suppose, the first major. The past. Again, the memory cells give their contribution. What really went on in the previous major solar system? Perhaps DK knows, perhaps some know, perhaps a record. It's the record can be read. And the events of the moon chain and of the solar system, previous solar system, can be seen. We are told there was a rebellion, and I think maybe Leadbeater, at least I think he's given some ideas about, from his psychic perception, what went on in the moon chain. I don't know if he went back to a previous solar system. And yet, in terms of time, that is the slightest retrogression. Time is so infinite, in a way, that it ceases to exist. So it is through the permanent atoms that the forces of materialism can work, and the Great White Lodge works through the seven centers. The forces of materialism are dealing with that which has its origin in matter from the dense physical body of the planetary logos and solar logos. But the Great White Lodge is dealing with a phohatic movement from the monad, which causes the vortices, chakras, to appear. So the origin is all together higher. Monadic, cosmic etheric, that is, compared with that which is part of the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos and planetary logos. Well, this all goes very deep. One can see. Aries begins the process and is the initiator of the process which leads to progress. That's the incarnation, of course. Initiator of the process, the incarnational process which leads to progress, cyclic progress, and at the end of the age, as it is now at the final or seventh initiation, the initiator, he calls this the final initiation. He's not counting the eighth or ninth, let's say, not counting. Oop. The eighth or ninth, even as it is now at the seventh, the initiator of the mysteries, that is the planetary logos, will work under instruction and with energies which emanate from the lord of the constellation Aries. This is the section in which he tells us that Aries will be the sign of initiation, taking over from Capricorn. In the last analysis, and esoterically speaking, fire is the great liberator and Aries is the leading fire sign, which will eventually fuse the beginning and the end, this is the Alpha and Omega, and blend the opposites, spirit and matter, and dispel both time and space. It actually has the 1 and 7, and pure being dispels both time and space. The beginning of this dispelling is starting at the third initiation. So, at present, the initiator of the mysteries acts under the inspiration and with energies emanating from Capricorn, an Earth sign, because humanity is as yet Earth-bound. But later, and when is that? At the end of the age. What age? Certainly not the immediate impending age of 2,500 years or even 25,000, much longer age. The forces of initiation produce their major effects upon the physical plane, for it is there that the initiate has to demonstrate his liberation, his understanding and divinity, but this will be different later. And will this end of the age be when humanity is greatly advanced and the planet itself has become a sacred planet? This is what we call veiling through non-specificity. I would call it that. Whoops. Through non-specificity. Veiling through non-specificity, the end of what age? If it's the seventh degree, and many are passing through the seventh degree, we know how very long that will necessarily take, because there are many now who will have to undergo still further development in the next solar system. Well, I'm going to come back to this, because it's too deep. So esoteric astrology, 90, Adventure 91, Section B, and we'll end this at page 304. And probably we will begin with Esoteric Astrology 92, I suspect. Esoteric Astrology Adventure. How very deep these subjects have been. We are really... Leo has such a material propensity in one way and is such a fiery sign of liberation in another. We are dealing with both sides of this and with advanced stages of evolution which are entered by the Leo subject. So the quaternary, the subjective quaternary of the reincarnating soul, Aries, Libra, Leo, and Aquarius, this is what we've been discussing, with necessary discussion of the permanent atoms necessary for bringing about the reincarnating soul, bringing about its incarnation, and then discussing the nature of the permanent atoms as repositories of memory cells holding the memories of the past and the qualities, thus quality of consciousness thus far achieved, and even perhaps taking us back to very remote periods. Memory in relation to the first solar system was discussed. So this will be beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 92, and it will be A and page 304. Well, okay, friends, that's it. We're at 2 hours, and that should be enough for today, I think. I'd like to keep going, but tonight there is a faculty seminar for the Maurya Federation, and we're working on Rule 1 for group initiation, the more advanced rules for disciples and aspirants, and it's getting later now, so I think we will have to let this go. So we'll see you on the next occasion with Esoteric Astrology Adventure 92A. So for now, farewell.